Welcome back to the Apples Podcast once again. I'm Yoti.
I'm Nachi.
Is this when I come in and introduce myself?
Yeah, that was a horrible intro, but we're keeping.
Yeah, no, let's go for it. Let's roll with it. Hi, guys. Not too sure what's going on here, but I'm Jay Nathanson, and I'm here on this podcast today to talk about my experience with obesity.
Ooh, very sensitive topic, I think.
Yeah. But I'm excited, definitely, to hear about it.
Mm. Yeah, me too. I feel like this is not a topic that's spoken about enough, especially in Zambia.
I think it's hard to talk about it, like, especially from a concerned point of view, because there's nothing you can say as someone who's concerned about someone's weight without coming off as offensive.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I think that's very true these days with trying to be politically correct. I think back in the day, people were a bit more overly blunt about their opinions on other people's weight. But then there's also, I feel like, because obviously we were compelled by your video when you were talking about childhood obesity. I feel like in Zambian culture, when your child is fat and juicy, that's what people like. You know, it's a symbol of money. We are really feeding our child well. I remember my mom actually saying to me that, no, Nachi, you need to eat so that when people come and see you, they're like, yes, she's eating well, she's enjoying life. I'm supposed to be fat for me to look healthy.
I think I remember something like that, but I think doesn't that originate from like West Africa? Because I remember with Nigeria, like especially when I was really, really big, someone tried to console me and be like, look, don't worry. It's a sign of beauty. That's why Nigerian men all go for large women or something. And I was like, what? This is not helping.
But then why were they telling you?
Yeah, like it's not helping me. So, and bred here in Lusaka, Zambia. I say here, but we're probably in different places. But yeah, born and bred here in Lusaka, Zambia. I'm the first of three boys in the family. And I think that's also what started this all off, you know. The firstborn's parents don't really know what's going on. And if you have an overbearing and overloving mother like I do, she just wants to give you the best of everything. So I think with me, it started from a young age, especially being like my parents' firstborn child. It's like, feed him whenever I cry, give him food. Like, you don't know any better. So I remember, so anyway, I stopped breastfeeding at 2 years old, which is actually, before you judge, that's actually when you're supposed to stop breastfeeding. But yeah, obviously.
Hey, I know people that stopped at 4 years old. So,
oof. Yeah. Okay. No comment, Game of Thrones.
No judgment.
No judgment. But yeah, so I went to primary school. I did my primary school at Pinewood. And then secondary school, I went to Chengelo. After that, I kind of just did random things with my life, just trying to figure myself out, you know. What's going on? What do I do? What do I study? Who do I become? So worked for a few years, and then I went to study nutrition at the University of Pretoria. And upon completion, I came back to Zambia and was given an opportunity by, at the time, he wasn't a friend of mine. He was someone I knew. He was a friend of a friend. So it was a really weird exchange because I just got back. I was looking for nutritional jobs. My dream was to work for the United Nations and what. So he had a company called Fit City. Yeah, so it was his company and whatnot. And I'd occasionally go and just, because like I said, friend of a friend, I'll go and visit him during working hours because I'm escorting my friend and whatnot. So that's basically how I knew him. I honestly don't think I ever had a conversation with him prior to this point. And when I got back, he literally he hit me up and he was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, okay. You know, it was a very weird conversation to have because I didn't know this person like that. And he's literally like, what are you doing? I said, no, I'm applying for a job. He's like, you did nutrition, right? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, no, just don't apply for a job. I'm like, what? What do you mean don't apply for a job? He's like, come and run my company for me. And I'm like, no, because I also had a very silly mindset at the time. I thought, you know what, I should do everything by myself. If I'm going to be successful, I should do it by myself. If I'm going to make money, I'll do it by myself. It was a very silly way of thinking. So I turned him down. And I was like, no, it's okay. Oh, thanks for the offer, but whatever. I'm still applying for jobs. And like, I think some time passed. Yeah, I prayed on it and he kept pushing. He kept pushing. He was like, look, perks to running a company, blah, blah, blah. I would be on your case, all these other things. And I'm thinking to myself, is this person mad? This guy doesn't even know me like this. And he wants me to run his company based off what? So yeah, as maybe life goes. No, he has really good vibes. Like even now, I'm really close to the guy. Like, and all of this happening.
You had good vibes. So that's why he was like, this guy can run things.
I mean, come on. I have great vibes. just joking. Joking, not joking. So yeah, I think the different job interviews, I did like 4 or 5 different job interviews. And like all of them like really rejected me. So I'm sitting here like, sure, this is rough. So what's going on here, God? Are you trying to tell me something? Are you trying to push me in a certain direction? So eventually I ended up taking him up on the offer. And now I'm the CEO of the company. So he's no longer in the country. He's abroad and I'm running the company in his place. And it's a fitness and wellness company. So I love the fact that I get to work with people who have a goal that was very close to me. People who want to change their lives, people want to transform themselves, and people want to lose weight and all of that. So that's what I work with on a daily basis now. And I'm so happy with it because I can share my story and literally be a testimony amongst the people who need it the most.
That's nice to hear. Really inspiring. I have a question though. I don't know. How do you... Okay, say for example, I have a friend or a family relative who's definitely going onto the obese side. Okay, no, first of all, as a nutritionist, or can I call you a nutritionist?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, as a nutritionist, like what exactly would you define obesity as? Like, when do I see that, oh, okay, there's a problem?
Well, there are indicators. For example, your BMI gives a good indication of whether you're overweight or obese because they're actually classes. So you can do your BMI. It's a simple calculation. All you need is your height and your weight. Yeah. Very simple. And then you do your calculations and you figure out what class you fall into. And then you can also compare that because BMI isn't really that accurate as an indicator because it doesn't take into consideration things like muscle mass and bone density. It's one of the indicators that you can do. And then there's also body fat percentage. So it's very hard to... Technically, according to BMI, I'm overweight or I'm obese because the ratio of my height to my weight is a bit off. But then again, it doesn't account for bone density and muscle mass, like I said earlier on. So then what you do is you refer to your body fat percentage, because the whole thing with this is if we look deeper than the surface, yeah, obviously no one wants to be overweight or obese, but the reason why we place such emphasis on it is because it can actually be very detrimental to someone's health. So hence why people have created these indicators. So basically what the indicators say is they have the title of obese and overweight, but basically what those say is if you fall within this category of obese, you are more prone to certain non-communicable diseases like heart attacks, diabetes, yeah, and all that. So it's deeper than rap, to say the least. It's health. So that's basically, you can't really look at someone and say, okay, I guess you can to say, wow, that person's unhealthy because you can see by the size of them. But then putting them in the different classes like overweight and obese one, obese two, that now comes to different indicators.
How would you advise someone to tell a loved one that, you know, I'm worried about you, worried about your health. I think you should, do something about it. Like, should you sit there? I know it depends on the person, but like, do you have any advice to offer as to, you know, how to tell loved ones that, the approach?
Yeah, that's a very interesting topic because like with me, I don't know if you saw the interview or whatever, but I don't know if I included in the interview that I did, but I don't know if I can say I was blessed, but I was fortunate enough to have people very raw around me. So I had literally, the reason why I was sent to Chengelo was to lose weight. I was told that to my face by my parent or my dad.
Would you Fatima as a nickname?
Yeah. So I had people, you didn't know it?
No, where did that come from? I don't get it. How does Fatima relate to being fat? Oh, Fatima!
Girl.
Wow.
But it just so happens that the way I was set up, I was able to take all of those things and just kind of try and move forward. And very recently, I tried the same approach.
So slow. Ooh, wow, okay. I understand.
I mean,
Yeah,
come
but I figured
on, it's not rocket science.
it Hey, I
Yeah,
don't
so
get
the funny thing about that is that actually for New Year's, I was with a couple of friends from Chengelo. So we had like a, we spent New Year's together. And this is what? This is now 10 years later. And I'm still being called Fatima by some of them. 10 years. Look, this is the case. You're fat. What? And at the time, you know, someone can easily take that as bullying. In fact, yeah, probably it was bullying to someone who was a friend of mine. Yeah. So we went to Chengelo as well together. And I kind of was like, look, you're being, I came out with it straight and I said it as it is. So a lot of people were talking about it and I came out and said it to the person. Okay, not to the person, but I said it to the person's best friend. And then, but I was
Wow.
closer to the person's best friend than I was with the person. Yeah, that's the thing. So it was like, even in me telling the person's best friend, it wasn't like I'm gossiping. I was like, you should tell this person, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, tell your
Yeah,
homie
so
that this
something
is
along those
real.
lines, and basically turns out in 2020 you can't do that because it's not politically correct. And yeah, it led to a whole thing. I got blocked on social media. Yeah, it was a whole
Wow.
thing. I they tried to get me fired or whatever for inappropriate behavior.
Wow.
Yeah, so
That's dramatic.
I was like, you know, clearly we're not all the same, and it's important to have a different approach. So to answer your question, it's a very tricky topic because there's not one person who's gained weight or who is obese or who is overweight that doesn't know that they are. So it's something that they know, and it's for most people deep insecurity. And as with everyone's deep insecurities, I don't think it's everyone's place to talk. Try to go to the closer ones. So if person A has this problem, like in your capacity, you know you're not that close with this person to say anything directly to them. So take another approach. Go to someone who's closer to them and say, look, and if you're gonna come with something, come with a solution. Yeah? Don't just say, oh my gosh, you're so big. Like that's something the person already knows. But if you go to even open your mouth on someone's weight, which is a very tricky topic, at least come with a solution or at least come with something to help. Otherwise, you're just talking for the sake of talking. So my advice to you is if you see someone gaining weight and you have no actual help and you have no intention of actually helping the person besides pointing out something to them that is very obvious to them, then you're better off just not saying anything.
That's
Fair
a really
enough.
good answer. I want to kind of take you back onto the topic of childhood obesity, and I think for me, my main question is, do you think that children are getting enough education on eating healthy and fitness? And how early on in school do you think children should be exposed to physical fitness and good eating habits? Do you think parents can be a little bit dramatic if their 3-year-old is asking for biscuits, sweets, and they're like, no, this is unhealthy, it's unhealthy? At what point do you think it's too
I
early?
honestly, that's such an interesting question because I can honestly say I was last in high school, not even high school, primary school, years ago. However, the unfortunate thing is that from the time I was in high school to compared to now, like for example, not high school, but when I was in primary. When I was in primary, things like debonairs, things like Hungry Lion were considered things like they were upper class things, to be honest. I remember every day, yes. Not even
Special
special
days.
days. I used to go to school with packed lunch from the dinner before. Like, and all my friends would come at lunchtime. Their parents would drop them off like debonairs or whatever, and all that stuff. Now times have completely changed. Those things that I once saw in primary school as luxuries and high-end things are now so accessible. Even if it's not like Hungry Lion or whatever, you can go to a government school just outside, you see the lunch that they're serving them, or whatever is readily available. Fast foods are more convenient these days. Fast foods are more convenient than wholly prepared foods. And for me, what I find so striking is that the times have changed so much. However, I don't know because I'm not currently in primary school, but I can bet a lot of money on the fact that the education system hasn't changed to cater for the changes in lifestyle. So it's very bad. And like to answer your question, you really need to introduce these things as early as possible, because children don't know it better. And it's something that was actually targeted in my degree, how to change the whole, because it is a transitional change. People now are getting fatter, or not fatter. People are now getting obese a lot earlier in life. And it's a whole change. So an obese mother is more likely to give birth to an obese child who later on grow up. These are factual. There's evidence for this. So the education needs to be there on different levels. There needs to be one education for the parents, and there also needs to be education for children, because children need to make more informed decisions. And the problem is, especially with African culture, we dismiss children as children. We say, until this person is old enough, they can't make informed decisions, which is really wrong. We don't empower kids enough to make their own decisions, because we dismiss them as children. So having this, they're having them empowered with the knowledge. So it's very funny, because we even see some of these things and we'll laugh and say, "Ah, this is a white child. This only a white can do something." Mom, to bring lunch, and then the kid be like, "Mom, no, I don't want this. Can I please have something a bit healthier?" Someone will look at that and say, "Yeah, that was a black child, beaten." But the point is, it's very funny, because the cultural changes, because someone who's associated with the color white is able to do something like that, and is able to, how can I say this, make informed decisions at a younger age. And then you have to ask yourself, you have to look at the differences in cultures and ask yourself, how would that pan out if that was a person of color? So yeah, education is very important. From an early age, people need to be able to make more well-informed decisions. Because at the end of the day, like if it was in my case, it's not that I gained weight because I loved eating. I gained weight because I was overfed. And I didn't know any better until I was really big. If I was younger and I had this knowledge that, look, the more you eat, the more unhealthy you'll be later on in life, I'll say, no, let me not. But now I'm being stuffed. I'm just doing as I'm a child. What better do I know?
Yeah. I have a question on something you mentioned in your video. By the way, if anyone hasn't watched it, I'm sure you can find the link to it on his Instagram. Where's the link to the video?
It's on Fit City's Instagram and Facebook. Yeah.
Oh, and their YouTube channel. There's something in the video where you talk about self-esteem. Now, what about the argument of, okay, if you're being bullied for your size in school, what about teaching the other kids to not pick on people for what they look like? Why are we focusing on what the fat kid has to change? Why can the fat kid not just learn to love themselves, but also you teach the kids around them that they shouldn't be treating other people like that? Because ultimately, regardless, no one should make you feel a certain type of way because of what you look like. So I think a very big thing that I have seen in media is the message on instilling in children that they have to learn their approach when talking to other kids. But then I feel like the blowback of that is we just allow kids to be fat. But then there's a self-esteem argument as well.
For me, I'm sorry, but I totally disagree with that. I think that's now something where we're more transforming more and more into a politically correct words, where we're trying to police children. How is that possible? How are we expecting something like that from children? Since the beginning of time, bullying has always been there. And it's wrong. It's something that's wrong.
So are you accepting that bullying is just something that we can't do away with? Like it's there.
In children, yes. It's something that they learn to see is wrong, hopefully with the right guidance. But it's part of growth. Everyone who's been on either end of the bullying chain, whether you were a bully or you got bullied, you've learned something from that. As a child, that's a detrimental step to growing up. You can't, and I think a lot of people don't understand how big the domino effect of removing something like that is. It's unfortunate, but it's the same thing as saying, "Oh my gosh, why should it's something so silly?" Like, sorry, my analogies are always just like on the spot, and sometimes they don't. But it's like, oh my gosh, why do lions have to eat impalas all the time? It's just so unfair. What? They can't fight back or something. So let's separate the lines from the impeller so this process doesn't happen. Something like that can mess up a whole food chain and hence a whole ecosystem. And
you're comparing bullying to the food chain.
But if you and like, look from an angle and like wave your other hand, it might make sense. That's my whole point. So even
no, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying because bullying, either way, even in adulthood life, even in the workplace, workplace bullying happens. You just have to learn how to navigate dealing with difficult people because 100%.
Now that's where we disagree. I believe at a certain point it needs to end. Yeah. So the people who still bully in adulthood are the people who fail to learn lessons from their childhood. So for example, I ask you girls, have you guys ever experienced any end of bullying, whether you were bullied or you were the bully?
Definitely.
Yes, she used to bully me.
And can I ask, have you grown? Have you grown or experienced anything from that whole experience?
My bullying experience, mm-hmm. I was bullied as an adult. And have I grown? I've definitely grown. I've just learned that people are difficult, to be honest. That's the only thing that I can come up with right now.
So you see,
I don't think I've been bullied or have been the bully. I've just been kind of like,
hey, scared. You're lucky. Look at you.
Yeah, I know, right?
You're in school. Who can bully Mbuyo?
Yeah, so you see what I'm saying? Like, I think doing away with that process it does more harm than good, because now children who don't know any better are now being told that, like, you only realize the effect of some of the things you've done or said when you get a bit older. It provides retrospect. It provides an opportunity for you to look back and say, damn, what I did was really bad. And I need to learn how to be better. And I need to teach people in the future to be better and not like me. So it provides all of these things. And I honestly think in terms of the victim, there's more growth there than anything else. Once again, depending on how you take things. So obviously I know bullying is very bad because it's reached a point in other countries where it's led to mass suicides. The suicide rate has gone up. People are depressed. People are manically taking it to different levels. And once again, that goes to the level of bullying that they've been through. For me, luckily, it wasn't anything bad. Like, it was name calling and things like that. But I know people who get physically bullied, who get verbally bullied. And sometimes that definitely needs intervention, especially when it comes to the physical abuse. It definitely needs intervention. But I think if we're going to try and cushion every blow, we won't get stronger. And we're not preparing anyone. It's like Shengelo. As much as they tried to cushion everyone from the reality of things and say, oh, do this, do that. When you go in the real world, you discover things don't operate by these rules that you set in your small environment. And it just becomes a lot harder to adjust and adapt to things once you realize you can't govern the whole world.
Nachi and I had a small argument. So we were reflecting back on our Chingelo days, and yeah, we all hated cross country and that double session of PE during the week. But I was telling her, like, look, looking back, I personally don't think we actually did enough physical activity for our age and our bodies. But she disagreed. And then I told her, like, from the bottom of your heart, do you honestly think that we did enough? Because, I mean, a 45-minute session, we're spending, like, 10 minutes changing, another 10 minutes warming up, like, 15 minutes or 20 minutes doing some form of sports and then dressing up again. And that was, like,
but we had 3 sessions of PE, Yoti. We had 3 sessions of PE. That's okay, a long time.
Enough. But actually, from the bottom of your heart, honestly, do you honestly think we did enough PE in school?
Yes, plus we went to climb Mount Mumbu, which you went to swim across rivers. That's enough.
Okay, anyway, so do you think that we did, like, do you think that schools and, okay, I don't know if you can count Chengelo because, yeah, well, they work us. But anyway, do you feel like schools actually do enough physical activity for like,
I
people?
I think that Chengelo definitely did a lot, like,
thank you.
Especially for me, someone who tried to join the sports teams, so I feel like if you did play a sport, you definitely feel it a bit more. And like was mentioned a bit earlier on, 3 sessions a week was intense, especially when you had that double session. And then it was crazy. Chengelo was very, it was very, I don't know now, but it was very sports demanding. It was very physically demanding. That was one of the selling points of that school. When it comes to other schools, I honestly don't think so. I think it's very easy to escape by if you're not interested in a sport. It's so easy to just go by and do the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. And even like for Chengelo, I remember there were certain girls who would never, especially when it came to like swimming, they'll just get a fake doctor's note and say, "Oh no, it's that time," you know. And then it's literally, I remember the whole argument was like, how come the guys can't have an excuse that lets them off the hook? Or is the girls? So yeah, it was very frustrating. But I think Chengelo definitely did a lot. And for me, honestly, that's the reason why I lost a lot of weight. And it's all about finding, I mean, we can't put everything on schools to make it mandatory to do so much. There has to be that added interest in in sports and whatnot, which actually does the extra bits in terms of getting enough activities in. But then if you ask me, the one way schools can contribute more is by raising the hype and raising the awareness with regards to all of these things. For example, things like, I remember I was very good at discus and shot put. Outside athletics, like, whenever did I do that? Like, never. Mm. Ever in my my life. And especially in Zambia, where it's like, we have so much talent. We have so many people who are, like, so fast and long-distance runners. We can actually field an Olympic team. There's no exposure. There's no outlet. And where does that start from? It starts from schools. But now the problem is it's always, oh, sports is football, basketball, and netball or something like that. Football, basketball, and this. What happens if those aren't your sports? I feel
Do you think there's a sport for everyone?
There's an activity for everyone. For some people, it might not be sports. So not everyone has sports. I know some people who are completely uninterested in anything sport-wise. Unfortunately, you can't cater for everyone, but schools should do as much as they can to try and do that, to cater for as many different people as possible, not just the football players or the rugby players, but make an outlet for cross-country, long-distance running. I know we had a lot of long-distance runners that weren't interested in playing sports. Inter-school cross-country, do inter-school volleyball, badminton, squash. There's so many different things that are out there. Problem is we focus on such a small scope that we only get a small number of people physically active outside the mandatory PE lessons.
I definitely see a change in the fitness culture in Zambia, and it's really good. A lot of people are getting into fitness these days. I think it's around the world, but I also think there's a slight unhealthy fitness culture. Like, what worries me is the obsession with taking protein shakes. And there's been a lot of studies that talk about how excess protein is actually not good for our health. And centenarians prove that you don't actually, the older you get, the much less protein you need. And everybody's trying to get buff. Everyone's trying to get big. Everyone's trying to lift weights so that their bum is shaped a certain way and protruding a certain way. And I think that in a way is borderline a bit unhealthy. And there's fitness influencers that have a big part to play in.
Yeah,
that.
Definitely. I mean, when the demand for something pops up, so does opportunity, unfortunately. It's the world we live in. And people will always try and push an agenda that will benefit them. For example, like you said, research shows that you don't need that much protein. Literally, someone who's lifting weights, the only people who actually need proteins are these people who like are doing it bodybuilding, like, and they need excessive amounts. And they don't also need protein for the whole, like, it's just a specific stage in their training cycle. Everyone else kind of doesn't. But then you look at the industry. Really? Look at things like Herbalife. Look at things like Nutritech. They literally make millions of it. You can't blame anyone. At the end of the day, it just comes down to being more well-informed. You have to take responsibility yourself. Otherwise, it's with anything. You have a phone or you have a laptop that's broken. You're going to do your own research before you take it for fixing. Otherwise, you can easily get conned. You have a car. You don't know what's going on. You go to someone who knows a bit more about cars before you take it to a mechanic so you can cross-check facts, because you don't want to be cheated. You're trying to gain weight or gain muscle. do your own research before you just go and listen to fads and buy protein shakes. Otherwise, you will get cheated. It's big because then
and that's a big
I
one.
Mean, I took that. I still take protein shakes now when I do train. But at least now I take it with more of an informed mind because I know a lot more about it. I know like excess protein puts a strain on your liver and your kidneys. I know that I don't need to necessarily have it to gain muscle. It just helps in certain aspects. I know all of that because I've studied that now and I've also done my research. I know certain like certain products like creatine in taken in excess actually has a negative effect on your body. So I don't take that anymore. It's all about being aware. If you're going to choose to get into this, I mean, it only makes sense to know what you're getting yourself into. I was just going to say, but I do understand there's a hype to look good. There's a hype to just, and I think it's so sad because end of the day, we do these things to be healthy, but that's not what we're chasing. We're chasing looks. We're chasing, like you said, the bums. We're chasing the muscles. Which, hey, I mean, I've been there. I mean, yeah. So I do that sometimes. I look at myself in the mirror and I'm not like, boy, am I looking unhealthy or am I feeling, I'm like, jeepers, I've gained weight. I need to get my muscle back or lose weight or something like that. And it's just unfortunate, but that's just how it is.
I've never actually met someone who studied nutrition except the owner of Umoyo. So I wanted to ask, what do you think, there's a great job market for people who want to be nutritionists in Zambia? And also, did people give you like their own opinions on what they thought about your choice to study
nutrition
at university?
Opportunity wise, I mean, whenever there's food, there's always going to be opportunity. But the thing is, I didn't know what I was getting myself into, to be perfectly honest with you. Because like I mentioned, after high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I took some time figuring it out. That time figuring it out actually was 5 years. So it took me a long time to figure out what to do. And like I worked, I did different jobs and whatnot. And then the reason why I didn't go to university is because obviously I didn't know what I wanted to do. And also I wasn't financially able because the money wasn't available for me to go to university at the time. And then 5 years later, the money was available. And I was like, okay, I can go to school now. And I'm tired of working at this point in time. So I was like, I need to study. And I didn't know what, imagine after 5 years, I still didn't know what I wanted to do. What a very silly thing. It didn't at all. I think I was kind of living life with a closed mind, so to speak. I was just going by. As long as I'm making money, I'm all good. I wasn't thinking outside the box, so to speak. So when the chance came to study, I knew one thing for sure. I knew I didn't want to be like everyone else, which is so stupid. If I can go back in time, I'll change that. But like, I didn't want to do the generic courses like the law or the doctor or the, you know, I just didn't want to do what everyone else was doing. Was my mindset. So when I actually got the opportunity to study again, I applied for architecture, civil engineering, physiotherapy, and nutrition to like 5 different universities. And
But how are those courses not what everyone else is doing?
How is civil, okay, who's doing physiotherapy?
Architecture.
Okay, but that's now. Now I'm talking about 2005. So, okay, but they're not the like the businessman and what like the typical. They're common, but like not common. But anyway, so I applied for all of them and I told myself I'll study the first one I get accepted for. And it happened to be nutrition. So I was like, okay, studying nutrition now. I guess that's what I'm doing. And then I don't even know what I that thinking, because I was just like, you know, nutrition seems pretty unique. I don't know anyone who's done nutrition, so let me pick this as an option. And it's actually what I got accepted for first. I was like, okay, dope, I'll do this. And then while doing it, I was just like, I was so confused, because especially me and my classmates were so confused, because this is University of Pretoria with like over 50,000 students. And I know some of my classmates, or not classmates, but my year mates, were doing things like law, of which in a class there will be like maybe 500 of them and whatnot. And in my intake, the number of people studying nutrition, there was 3 of us. three. Yep, three. What? Actually, no, four of us. Sorry, four of us studying nutrition. And other degrees had like 500. Other degrees have like 1,000. And here I am with three, four of us. So I was like, okay, this is an interesting choice. I wanted something unique. I definitely got it. And as the years went by, we were more confused than anything because we're like, what the hell are we going to do with this knowledge? Because nutrition falls directly in between food science and dietetics. So dietitians are healthcare workers. They're actually healthcare workers that work in hospitals. And they work on consultation basis. So they do like a lot of these. When someone, they work with diseases and whatnot in the hospital. And then food scientists work with the chemicals of food and like on a chemical breakdown, like processes like aging food, like not Asian, aging food, skin food, the different chemicals and biochemicals inside the foods and all that preservation. And then we're just slapped there in the middle and that knowledge. So we literally had a bit of this and a bit of that. And it's like, we were so lost because after 4 years of studying, we were like, the dietetics knew what they were going to do. They knew they were working in the hospital. And then the food scientists knew that they were working in the labs. It's kind of like, okay, what do we do? Because we have a bit of knowledge here and a bit of knowledge there, but we don't have enough knowledge to do anything per se. So nutrition as a degree is, it provides. And then after that, when I came back and I finished, because I finished with an honors degree, but in order for me to apply to the UN or the Food and Agriculture Organization, I needed a minimum of a master's degree for nutrition. And that's basically because your whole honors degree is literally just an introduction to nutrition, where you get a bit of that food science knowledge. So with an honors degree in nutrition, that's why it was so hard for me to find a job, because people knew that they'll be hiring someone with just, I know the theoretics. And with nutrition, basically what you can do is just enter. And I'm pretty sure as soon as you guys heard, oh, I know a nutritionist, the first thing that popped into your mind, like, oh, he knows how to make diet plans and meal plans, and he can make me fit. Make me fit. So for me, that was,
I mean, so I won't lie.
Like, imagine studying things like, I did 3 years of biochemistry. Oh, wow. You do nutrition? Oh, what do I need to eat?
Only for you to make like, a diet plan for someone.
Yo, fam. I can recite the Krebs cycle in my mind right now, and you're asking me about what you should eat to look good. Calm down. So it's like there's a lot of misconception around it. So even when people, I did tell people I was studying nutrition, they're like, my uncles and whatnot tried to talk me out of it to say, hey, there's no money in that career. I don't think you should do it. And do something else. So there is that sort of view in terms of nutrition, but like, it's a very small-minded view, because nutrition in general, especially if you're going to do it right, you are not targeting making people slim. Obviously, that comes with benefits because you're making people healthy, but you are focusing more on the community. Whereas dietitians are now like, that's the person you want. If you want a meal plan, that's, you go to a dietitian. Nutritionists, they work more with communities. They'll go inside the community and be like, okay, in this community, they're very impoverished. They suffer rickets. There's a vitamin D. There's a mass vitamin D deficiency here. How can we try and sort this out? What sort of strategies can we implement? They work with policymakers. For example, some of that, they'll go to the government and be like, look, in this area, you've got a lot of people who are malnourished. They have a deficiency of these diseases. The local products grown don't provide these. So what we can do, we can now start a fortification program here where we educate people and also fortify the local products. So maybe we can add a bit more vitamin A to plants by doing some cross with this other plant. So it's a lot more like that, if that makes sense.
I've definitely learned something new today.
I mean, I thought that, to be fair. I know I said I've only met the owner of Umoyo who's done, who's a nutritionist, but I actually know someone as well who's a nutritionist for the NHS, and she works for a children's hospital, and she helps kids with their nutrition. It's very sweet and endearing.
There's like opportunities to help at all fronts, and it's a lot more than just. So it's, if you're looking for fulfillment, it's a very fulfilling career, and it's just a shame that, okay, I wouldn't say it's a shame. Love to down the path of like being in, an implementer and coming up with programs to try and help people in rural communities, and also just having an effect on the on a bigger scale. And who's to say maybe that will happen? But at the moment, I'm working with more individuals and whatnot, and I still love it. And if I could go back in time and change anything, it's, it would just be that I'd be more open-minded in the past, especially when doing nutrition, because I was more caught up in finishing the degree than actually just trying to have like what I can do to apply this knowledge in the bigger scale of things. So yeah, it's like with everything else, like people talk so much nonsense about a lot of things. And people tend to judge you by how much money your career can make. But at the end of the day, I saw this video that really made me, because I was confused for long, guys. 5 years is a long time. I was confused. I watched this one video that says, look, if you're chasing, think about it. If you're trying to think about what you're going to do for the rest of your life, just think about it in a way that you remove money. So you ask yourself, you've got all the money that you already have. What are you now doing for the rest of your life every day? Because otherwise, that's the only way you can find the real answer as to what you want to do. And then even if, let's say you do that and you're like, oh, I'll be a painter. Yeah. And you know that, look, okay. And then people will talk down on that and be like, look, you can't do this because there's no money. The fact that if you had all the money that you wanted, this is the career you will go down, is a good indication that this is the career you will excel in. And if you're excelling, you're going to attract the money towards you. Because if otherwise you're just doing something you don't like for the rest of your life to make money, to repeat that cycle, there's no actual need to grow. You're not going to want to grow and excel in your position because you don't like it. So I told myself, I didn't come down to that specific answer in terms of like what I want to do, but I knew that I wanted to have an impact and I knew that I wanted to make a difference. So that's what kind of steered me towards that nutrition, because I was like, look, this actually makes sense. Because if I do this right, I will have an impact and I will make a difference, which is fundamentally what I want to do. Even if I'm not getting paid for it, I'd want to do these things.
Well, I think even if you're initially coming on to just talk about your story with childhood obesity, I think you've really given listeners some really good advice, because you've touched on not caring about what people think, putting yourself first, having a vision, thinking about what you want to do in future, not just taking
guys.
What you said at the end is really good advice.
It's been a great experience to just talk about, like you said, obesity and all the other things that come with it. Because it literally, at the end of the day, when you talk about something as sensitive as obesity, it literally shapes someone's life. And I wouldn't be the person I am today if I wasn't fat when I was younger. That's just the simple truth of it.
I mean, the way you're saying it, you're just saying it with confidence. I was fat, I was obese. Like, I the way you're saying it, you talk about with so much, what's the word? You've clearly moved on, and
we're a lot more than what we are on the outside. If you have disabled people like Stephen Hawking, like so many, all those guys, like, it transcends the outside, and who you actually are on the inside is what really matters. Yeah, that's your selling point, not how good you look in clothes or how bad you look, but who you are is where the money is.
I think that's getting harder these days, though, with social media. I know this is such a common thing that is spoken about, but I think you only realize when you catch yourself thinking a certain type of way, that you're judging someone based on how they look, or you've taken a group photo and you don't even want to upload it because either you look bad or your
friends
look
bad. It's terrible. There's social pressure.
The image culture is horrible now. Thanks for coming on again. Speak to you later in future.
No problem. That's